So hello and welcome to our teleseminar, Profile of a Successful School. This is going to be an interview with the owner of Ottawa Academy of Martial Arts. We're interviewing Pat Cooligan. Pat's the owner, and he is a Henzo Gracie Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school. Today I'm really excited to have Pat with us. Pat is currently in Brazil teaching and working with some of the very best Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructors in the country over there. I wanted to quickly let you know how I met Pat and his partner Chris, as well as his entire staff. Before we get started with the interview, I want to give you my first impressions that I had when visiting his school. And Pat had called me in to do some in-house consulting work with him and his staff on how to grow their enrollment and build their business. And at the time, I believe, Pat, you were a little under 100 students at the time when we first met. Is that correct?
Yeah, we were right around 90 students.
90 students. And then, anyway, I immediately accepted. I flew out from New York to Canada. And from that very moment I walked into Pat's school, I immediately knew that they were going to be a huge success. And this is what I had observed. I saw an impeccably kept facility, well decorated. It was spotless when it comes to the cleanliness of the school. I did not see a sign on the wall that wasn't professionally printed and framed. Me, with myself, I have a pet peeve, and I normally go around into the school's nooks and crannies to see whether the school is maintained. I usually take a look in the bathroom to see how the school maintains their bathrooms. This might stem from me being a little bit of a germaphobe, but really, the bathrooms are the area that gets neglected the most, and I always look at the school from a parent's and the client's point of view, and I have to say that their entire school, including the bathrooms, were spotless, and you could literally eat off the floors. And I knew from that day on, with a little bit of work, that these guys would be a huge success. And now today, they've grown to, I believe, over 600 students, and you're continually growing every day. So I want to welcome you, Pat. Thanks for coming on the line and spending that time with me and sharing with all the Member Solutions clients. And I know you must have some other things that you could be doing more fun in Brazil, but you're taking the time out and calling in. And what time is it over there right now?
We are an hour ahead of Eastern Time.
Okay, so it's not that bad. It was a 14-hour flight?
Yeah, it was a couple hours down to D.C., and then it's just about 10 hours out of D.C., so a little more than 12 hours in the air.
Well, thanks for sharing with us. So how right now, what's your primary reason for the trip? Is it for training or a bit of R&R or both of them?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a three-pronged trip. A good friend of mine, Igor Gracie, who's obviously one of Henzo Gracie's black belts, he's getting married on Friday. I'm down here for that. And as well as obviously the primary reason I come down to Brazil is to train at Gracie Baja here in Rio de Janeiro. And, for a lot of school owners, another really interesting concept is I've got into importing a lot of gear from various places around the world because, geese and textiles and then certain things in developing countries like Brazil is so extraordinarily cheap. When you cut out that middleman, it can really affect your bottom line a great deal.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your retail because you've really done well on that in a minute. But let's start off right now. I wanted to just give us an idea of what your current enrollment is at the school as we speak.
We fluctuate, the school of my size, we fluctuate anywhere, and I mean, we have multiple programs, so we fluctuate anywhere from 440 to 600, and that's a comprehensive number of all our programs, because we run a fitness AM boot camp, we run an after-school program, as well as, your standard children's program in the evening. And then, obviously, we have the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, mixed martial arts, and Muay Thai as well.
Okay,
so covers all the programs.
That was going to be one of my questions, I'll definitely like to go back into that. But when we met initially, we had said your student base was about under 100 students. You were billing about what a month, about 9,000 a month, 8,000 a month, somewhere around there?
Yeah, in and around there somewhere.
And now you said you're anywhere as high as 600, but averaging around 450 to 500 students, and your billing volume has more than quadrupled, correct?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is, our billing through Member Solutions has well over tripled, almost quadrupled. And then, you know, obviously we run a great deal of revenue through our debit and credit card machine as well.
Right, for deposits and things like
that.
That
figure alone. Yeah, to give you an overall idea of the overall school gross, for the month of August, we had our best month ever at $87,000.
That's amazing. And now, I want to just bring us back in time. You and I had met because you just happened to be in New York. You stopped in to visit my school and kind of like pick my brain a little, and I was really, you know, honored to have you come down and meet with you, and we spent some time together, and that turned into a relationship where later on I came to your school and did some consulting work. And at the time, though, when we first met, I think was on the telephone, right? You had called. We did a conference call with Member Solutions or whatever. And I think
I mean, we met through the Member Solutions, the 20-minute calls offered, you know, to all their clients. And then really, you know, I think we only spoke to once, and that got the wheels spinning. And, you know, as you said, my teacher, Hensel Gracie, lives in New York, and you're just in West Islip. So it was a natural fit for us to come meet you.
Yeah, and let's go back to the point where when we first spoke, and this is really important for other school owners, is that I initially said that you were underpriced. And I know from Canada you were saying, well, yeah, you know, this is a guy in New York, and of course the prices are higher. And you kind of thought, like, you know, I was just kind of off the top of my head, you know, giving you a figure where, you know, you could raise your prices to, and you thought it was a little outrageous until you did it. And then you raise your prices, and since then we've raised them a few times, actually. So give people insight on, you know, that first initial conversation where you were a little hesitant, because most school owners are very nervous, and I'm not saying in our economy we should just go right out and raise our prices, but I think still to this day most people are way underpriced when it comes to their tuition. So give us a little, our listeners, a little insight on that.
Well, I think, you know, that's kind of the, you know, the truest, you know, one of the truest things, you know, that's going to be a great fear for a school owner. Like, I'll just give you a little insight to my experience, because I thought, you know, in point of fact, that, you know, you were being very aggressive. You know, we'd only spoke for 5 minutes, and, you know, you came to that assessment basically the first 5 minutes. You know, we dialogued two or three questions back and forth, and you're like, you have to raise your prices. And I personally was a bit taken aback, and, you know, quite frankly, I didn't buy it. And, you know, now over time, I've raised my prices, I would say, about almost 100% across the board. And, you know, that's going back, you know, 3-4 years. And, you know, as I said, going from 90 students to a high of 600, and your price is going up by 100%, you know, it obviously works. It's just, it's going to be difficult for the school owners to get into that mindset. You know, people want a quality product. They don't necessarily, I mean, a lot of people or a consumer in general, they don't go out and they say, you know, give me the cheapest pair of shoes you have. That's just not the way it goes. I mean, if you look at Nike's shoe sales, there's a reason, and they're not the cheapest. People want quality, and unfortunately, they associate that directly with the price.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting as well, you already, you know, most of the time when I meet a school, it's a matter of developing that school into a more professional organization so that they can charge a more professional price. But when I met with you guys, you had all the things it took, the quality facility, the, you know, the space, the program, everything was there. It's that your price didn't match your product. It was almost like saying that some guy designed a new car and the car was, you know, far superior than any other car in the market, but they were pricing themselves along with the most cheapest car. And I immediately, once I saw that, I knew that you guys were worth more. But just from talking to you, I knew that you could charge much more than you were. And that's part of what you did, and it really turned out to work to your advantage. Now,
absolutely.
What other programs, I know you said you're teaching, what are the three main or the four main things that you teach in the school?
Our three largest programs by far is, you know, traditional Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And what I mean by traditional Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is, you know, in the age of mixed martial arts, there's so much, you know, grappling this, the submission wrestling that. It's traditional Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with the gi, and that's one program. The other program is Muay Thai kickboxing, and then our children's program. Those are our three biggest programs. We also have an MMA program but you know, it's obviously not as large because, unlike a lot of schools in today's market, we're not offering MMA to draw in the numbers. We're just offering MMA for people that are who want to be competitive, and that number is extraordinarily small.
Yeah, and I'm going to get back into that because I think you have a rather unique philosophy on the MMA as well, and let's get back to, we'll go back to that in a little while. Now, do you have agreements in your school, contracts as we call them, or agreements so it's less confrontational at your school in Canada?
Do you mean what are the parameters of the membership agreement?
When people sign up for a period of time and they sign up and they're obligated to pay for a certain amount of months and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. We have the 12-month agreement is our standard agreement. In the rare case that there is, you know, for example, if somebody, we have a student that is home for the summer, or we have, say, military personnel, somebody that is trying to give us, you know, some sort of excuse to shy away from the 12-month agreement, we will, by occasion, do it, but it's a small, small fraction. There's a 20% surcharge. I personally strongly believe in a minimum agreement of 12 months. And, you know, we really, you know, send that home. If they want to make the commitment to do martial arts, they need to be, you know, in the academy a minimum twice a week. And, you know, that's something I absolutely firmly believe in, is, you know, a minimum 12-month agreement.
Now, are your competitors, and which you're in an area where you have competitors, but not like I would say, where you also have a school in California that you work with where the competition is fierce, just like in Long Island, we have a competitor on every street corner. But do your competitors kind of compare in price, and do they have contracts as well, or are you kind of like bucking the system and still creating huge success for yourself?
I basically do a few things that are, you know, definitely unique. As I said, I really promote the 12-month agreement. Sometimes in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai being the primary programs for the adults, and we are top-heavy with adults, you know, that isn't always a trend. And we are by far, you know, the most expensive school in the city that offer you know, those two programs, with the exception of maybe one other school. But, I mean, we're the biggest school. Generally speaking, we're the highest priced. And, you know, we also have another policy that if you're going to train with us, for example, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or Muay Thai, you know, you train with us, you don't train at another school. Now, if somebody else wants to do boxing or something, you know, mm-hmm. that we don't teach boxing, that's fine. But, you know, we obviously demand a commitment from our students. And it's really funny is we gain so much criticism for that policy. But, you know, we bring in a lot of great names. We do a lot of high-end seminars, and that's a privilege. That's a privilege of membership. So, I mean, just 2 weeks ago, we had Igor Hollis and Gregor Gracie. We had three Gracies up to my school for the weekend. And, you know, I'm constantly bombarded with inquiries from other schools, students, can I come and attend the seminar? I'm like, absolutely, you can come and attend that seminar, but at the same time, you have to sign up on a 12-month membership agreement. I mean, it's a big part of our marketing.
That's great. Now, what I've found also is that you have a really great staff. Of course, you've had some issues like all of us do where people don't pan out, but the majority of people that you have now are still the same people that I met when I met you 3 years ago. And so I have a few staff questions, but right now, currently, how many full and part-time staff members do you have working at your one facility?
For full-time staff members, I have 6 full-time staff members currently, and then they pretty much handle all the day-to-day operations. Then I have several other, you know, part-time instructors that only would come in to, you know, teach a class. They don't have anything to do with the day-to-day runnings of the school.
Okay, great. And now, this I found to be amazing, and we've spoken about this in detail, but you have some really unique methods of motivating your staff, some that I would say are just so generous, So tell us about a few of the contests that you ran, because I think people are going to be blown away by it, and you may even get a list of resumes and on email after this, because people are going to come want to work for you. But tell us about, you know, the Hawaii trip, the Thailand trip, all these things that you've done for your staff to motivate them in the contests that you had going on.
Well, basically, I mean, I believe, and this is my humble opinion, and, you know, a lot of people might argue to, you know, argue against it, but I believe the staff is the backbone of your academy. It does not matter what type of a martial arts school owner you are. You have other commitments. You know, you have, life gets in the way. So I rely heavily upon my staff, but I reward them heavily. I mean, all of my full-time staff members have a company vehicle, and they have, you know, their insurance is paid, and they have a gas card. God knows today that helps a great deal. So that's all part of their salary package. And then we also have sales objectives. Like, you know, I'll set a very lofty sales objective. And last year they met that sales objective, and it was a tiered objective. Like the first, I believe the first prize was a trip to Las Vegas for New Year's. Second place prize, we were going to go to NASA in the Bahamas. And then the top tier prize was we were all going to go to Oahu at Christmas time and, you know, spend 10 days out there over Christmas and New Year's. And believe it or not, they destroyed the sales objective. And when I say it was very, very aggressive, it was. And the motivation that the staff put forth. And so we're all, you know, we're all off to Hawaii on December 22nd.
Yeah, that was just amazing. So that is unbelievable. And also you've taken some guys to Thailand as well, right? If they met a certain criteria, you were going to take them, pay for their trip, they were going to go down there and train, and you've done that as well, right?
Yeah, basically, I mean, and this is, again, it was just a bit of ingenuity. You know, a lot of people are going to think it's grossly generous, but generally what I will do is, you know, I will have a student or I will have an instructor, and if he shows particular promise, because generally all of my instructors compete. That's something that, you know, was unique to my school. And it generally costs me about, you know, $4,000 to $5,000, and that would send them over to Thailand for a month. So, you know, if they perform well and they're selling well, and, you know, I mark each individual instructor student retention. You know, you can always see by the classes if you keep a close track. And then what I do, in fact, is while they're over there, I will generally have them purchase, you know, generally in the neighborhood of $10,000 worth of gear. So I expend about $15,000 when I send them to Thailand. But because you're buying that gear in Thailand, the general markup here in North America is 400% to 500%. So, in fact, every time I send a student of mine for a month over to Thailand, I make a tremendous amount of money. So it works out, you know, in all of our favor.
That's great. Now, also, you had just said, which is important, where whenever I do my consulting, I talk to school owners and I say to them to track, you know, we need to know the DNA of our school to the point where we know exact details, and you and I have discussed this with your staff in detail. So you had just said something that you track and monitor the successes and the retention of the specific program that each instructor is teaching. So one first question is, does one instructor handle, let's say, the children, another one do the grappling, or is there a mix between, and how do you monitor how well they're doing, and what do you do if they're not doing well? I mean, what is the training methods and so on?
Well, basically, I mean, when it comes to staff members, you know, I'm very much of the mind, you know, a round peg goes in a round hole, a square peg goes in a square hole. And often, you know, as school owners, we feel that we're dealt a very limited hand of cards, so to speak. So, you know, we're trying to jam that square peg in the round hole, and it's not working. And, I mean, if you can have the best instructor in the world. Like, I myself, you know, I've got 15 years of teaching experience, but you know what? I don't jive particularly well with kids. I mean, for the people that have met me, you might be able to imagine why. Kids are very, you know, leery and apprehensive of me. So, you know, I'm just not a good fit for kids, and it's important to recognize that, you know, in yourself and with your staff. And you know, we're constantly always tweaking and noticing things. And I mean, we just had an exceptional Muay Thai practitioner in my school, very, very high level competitor, and fantastic. But and he was well liked, but he was well liked because he was a great fighter, and he was bringing to school a tremendous amount of notoriety. But he was horrific as an instructor, like just terrible. You know, very selfish, was more worried about training, and I ended up having to make that hard decision to get rid of him. And but you know, you just have to. You don't necessarily have to get rid of somebody. What I try a lot is like what I call like a corporate, you know, shuffle. Right. Someone's not working out here. Let's try them here. Because I believe in extending every chance to your employees, because we put so much time and effort into them, and maybe not even monetarily, but, you know, just the amount of man hours that goes in somebody to make them proficient at whatever chosen martial art they're practicing.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, I give them every opportunity, and, you know, I spoke to you at length about this. Sometimes you do have to know when to cut your losses, and, you know, I had to do that, and it was one of the toughest things, but I'll tell you, the results I had after I did it was astronomical.
Yeah, and it's true, and I know this because I'm probably the worst person in the world to give advice on this category, although I could give the advice, but I don't follow in my advice. I'm too quick to hire, too slow to fire. I have a program manager in one of my locations right now that is really not a great salesperson. They're a good administrative person, so, you know, and I've held on to them way, way too long, and I really honestly believe that we need to know when it's not good for our business anymore and make a decision not based on emotion. And, you know, as Donald Trump would say, you know, you're fired, you're just not working out. He seems like he's doing it all out of ego, but really it's best for the company, the employees, and for the actual person who's being fired, because if they're not performing well at their job, they could probably do much better somewhere else. So now, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, basically, in terms of that, you know, I have my staff team, you know, the one dealing with the admin side, they have access to my member solutions, so they can pull up what our cash flow projection is and what we're billing, and I draw a line in the sand, and I'm like, guys, if we dip below that, you know, changes need to be made, and changes need to be made, you know, next month.
Exactly.
And, you know, we have a minimum, and, you know, above and beyond our member solutions tuition check, as I said, we have a ton of revenue coming in off of our, you know, our debit credit card machine. I'm like, this has to be the overall monthly gross, and anything else is not acceptable.
Right, right.
And I mean, people need to know that, because they get complacent and they do get lazy.
Yeah, absolutely, and you have to stay on top of them. The whole main thing is follow up and follow through, or inspect what you expect, and you know, all those different analogies, but it's important that you do it, not just talk about it. Now, tell us a little bit about it. I know you have a very tiny retail section. Well, since the last time I was there, not a large, you know, in my school I have like a 1,500-square-foot store. You have a few walls decorated with, you know, some of your retail, yet I forget what the numbers were, but the last time I was there, you sold thousands of rash guards and T-shirts that are, you know, imprinted with your logo and your name, and you do drink sales, and you get some sponsorship from the soft drink company and so on. Tell us a little bit about how you did that and how you incorporate that into part of your revenue stream and why you're so successful at it.
Well, I would say, you know, our conservative estimate on, you know, in-house apparel is around, you know, $10,000 to $12,000 a month, and that's a very, very conservative estimate. You know, we do well over $100,000 a year, and again, that is dealing from last year, because I don't have this year's numbers. And basically, we have a lot of things. Like, for example, for those of you that are familiar with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, we obviously wear the standard gi while we train, but, you know, we have two no-gi classes a week. But I don't believe in having, you know, five guys or in one T-shirt, five guys in another T-shirt. Like, we have a no-gi uniform. And, you know, they have to have the prescribed uniform. So, I mean, we have 250 BJJ students. So, you know, they need a rash guard, they need a T-shirt, they need the shorts. They need the patches for the apparel. For Muay Thai, it's the same. We sell absolutely everything, and we're constantly doing more designs. And then, every single time we have an event, for example, if it's a monthly fundraiser, we will have a T-shirt that goes along with that. And, it's just absolutely astonishing how much gear we sold. I remember my first year, I bought about $10,000 worth of T-shirts. And then, as I said, last year we were over $100,000.
Now I have to say it was interesting because initially when we met, you really weren't retailing. You kind of had it like an option if people wanted to do this or that, and you weren't as strict as far as you were definitely strict as far as your uniform code, but you weren't retailing nearly as much, and you put that into play, and I think you were a little leery because you didn't want to appear to be, marketing or, overselling, but now you're doing that, and, $100,000 is probably more than most martial arts schools are netting, or even grossing, I should say, for the year, period. Tuition, retail, everything. So what was the change, what was the shift in the paradigm that you had that made you, start branding your name and all of that, and how did you, what was the step, what was that shift?
There's a lot of things. There's variety. That's number one. Definitely at our school, and I know Ali, I know you've been there, and you hear this banter and this hollow rhetoric about so many different schools, about that team atmosphere, the camaraderie, and this is something that at my school is the backbone of the school. That is so much of where our success is. And you know what? If I wear a T-shirt, my senior students want to wear that T-shirt, and it's just the domino effect right down through, black belt through white belt. And, to give you an idea, we recently had an MMA event we were at that we had four people competing in that event, and, out of four people, my school sold 520 tickets, okay? Wow. And we have a photograph of about 450 T-shirts of ours in the stands. We had two whole sections of a hockey rink.
Wow.
It's just like you don't go to that event without a T-shirt. And because we had so many fighters on the card, the third of the card was our students. We offered $10. We sell our T-shirts for $25. We offer them $15 if you buy a ticket to go to the event. So almost every single person at that event had our T-shirt. And let me tell you, when you're at a MMA event with, 4,000 people, when you have 500 people there and they're all wearing your shirt, it's great advertising.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, that's something that you're doing really well. In fact, speaking of advertising, let's jump into that because this interview is going so quickly and there's so much information to cover. One of your events that you and I, when we met in Florida at the Super Show, you had said that you had a staff of people that were at one of Canada's biggest festivals in your town or whatever, and you had a unique way of promoting. And tell us quickly about that. I thought that was really cool.
I'm sorry, Ali, you kind of broke up on me.
Okay, but remember when we were in Florida, I was at the Maya Super Show with you guys. We had spoken about an event that you guys were promoting at where you had a bunch of people, a booth, and you had your tattoos for your school. Tell us a little bit about that promotion event that you did real quickly.
Yeah, basically in Ottawa, Canada, where I'm from, we hold the largest outdoor beach volleyball tournament in the world. That might sound a bit absurd being that it's up in northern Canada, but it is. And the event is called Hope Beach Volleyball, and that supports a whole gamut of charities. We had 30,000 people in attendance at this one outdoor beach volleyball tournament, and I made a deal with the organizers. And we had a booth on site. What I did was I had 10,000 tattoos made up of my school logo. And we had 300 Frisbees made up with our school logo, website, and phone number. There's so much downtime between the games that, there's hundreds of volleyball teams sitting around. So we just handed out the Frisbees. But if they wanted a Frisbee, they had to take a tattoo. So, we handed out thousands upon thousands of tattoos. We had 300 Frisbees out at the event. And we, that day, for my school, in terms of, you know, what we call a hard lead, name, phone number, email, we got 400 leads in one day.
Yeah, and don't forget, I think, didn't you have some bikini girls as well helping with the tattoo distribution?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to lie. When we go to an event like this, we have some very, very aggressive marketing. I mean, we had, you know, four absolutely gorgeous young ladies. They were there in two-piece bikinis, and the guys just flocked for a booth. And, I mean, it was that young male, 18 to 40 years old, you know, the key demographic for our two adult programs. And, you know, they were obviously enchanted by the young ladies, and then they were getting the sales pitch as well. And, you know, we're not sexist, so we had four or five of the guys there shirtless with the six-packs, like some of the competitive, you know, MMA and Muay Thai fighters we have, and they were bringing in the ladies. And it was just a great, great event. And,
yeah, that's awesome. I know. I loved it when I heard it, and I think that's phenomenal. So, again, it just goes into really getting out there, meeting the right people, promoting your school, and always being constantly in that that arena. Now, the martial arts right now, everyone is leaning towards MMA. I think that you're a really good person to speak to because although you teach MMA in your school, and most people would think that you do Muay Thai, you do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, that you are the what we would say an MMA school, but you are a clean-cut, family-based, team-based MMA school or you know, martial arts school, but you don't have all the negative kind of things that are going on, and we've discussed this in detail as well. What's your opinion on that, and how did you accomplish that, and what do you feel about the direction of, you know, the schools that are promoting their art in that respect?
Okay, well, first, to give people a little background on how I feel on the subject, in terms of martial arts, my real passion is, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with the gi, sport Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you know, what you might see at the World Championships or the Pan American level. That's what I love. You know, obviously, I'm the vice president for the governing body of Muay Thai in my area in Canada as well. But, I mean, my real passion is Jiu-Jitsu and Muay Thai. But with that goes the MMA. And with the insane popularity lately of, you know, the Spike TV show, obviously, you know, Sewer Mouth, Dana White, you know, UFC is on another level. So it brings me, you know, just a tremendous amount of students. We always laugh. The Monday after UFC pay-per-view, we know we're going to get half a dozen people coming in saying they want to be pro MMA fighters. And I think it's a double-edged sword, in my opinion, because it's going to bring the numbers in. And, you know, a lot of these guys are young, fit, elite-level athletes that want to train. But then you do get the knuckleheads. You get the knuckle-draggers, basically the guys that are bad attitude. You know, they're just, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, they're trouble. And when it comes to people like that, I have the luxury of being incredibly fortunate and having a big school. I just ask those guys to leave. Like, I don't have them. You know what I mean?
Right, and, yeah, absolutely. Now, in your school, though, even though that you are teaching now, again, I don't want to sound MMA negative because I'm a huge, and you know this, I'm a huge MMA fan. I've been doing jiu-jitsu and grappling for my whole life, and I just love the art, but I really... The one thing that bothers me is that I think that people are taking the art and thinking that what they see on Spike TV and some of the other shows, that that's what a guy like you who needs to, you know, who has a school that teaches this kind of style and is achieving some success has to change the way they do things. And you don't. Your people are all real respectful. They, you know, they're courteous. There's a family element in your school. What did it take to, you know, what does it take to maintain that in your school?
Well, it takes, you know, it takes what people like me and you take for granted. Like, for example, I've had the luxury of training, you know, all over the world. You know, I'm going to be on the mat. You know, the minute I hang up this phone, I'm going to train here in Brazil. You know what? Guys got to wear shirts when they train. Guys have to say please and thank you. They got to keep, you know, the sailor's mouth in check. And, you know, what happens is, so many of these people that come into MMA, they don't have that traditional martial arts background. If somebody studied karate and aikido or traditional jiu-jitsu, you know, they would come in and they would know how to act. But they're just like, for lack of a better word, like ruffians coming off the street. And so many of these, what you'd call, you know, combat-ready martial arts, you know, like Muay Thai, like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, they never had enough of that structure and that discipline. And, you know, that's something that we've changed in my school. Like, our school has incredibly strict rules. Like, you know, you can't even take your gi top if you're not off, if you're not in the change room. Between every single class, to avoid, like, any skin ailments, you have to put on a new uniform. So if you train three classes that night, if you're asking me, do I have to bring three gi-tops to class? I'm like, yes, you do. You know, and respect is paramount. You know, everybody lines up and bows and shakes hands at the end of class. And if people don't have time for that, I don't have time for them. And, you know, we have to let people know that, you know, martial arts in particular is not what you see on Spike TV. Because let me tell you, there's a big difference between an Ultimate Fighter and a martial artist. They're not even closely related.
So now, again, you know, and I just want to, I love what you just said, and I just want to quickly, just real quickly go on that. So you said that, you know, the difference between a martial artist and, let's say, an Ultimate Fighter is that tradition, is it, and now tradition doesn't mean, like in my school, ancient principles that have been passed down in generation to generation, but knowing that what you're, the environment, the tradition of your environment, of you know, the protocol, the respect, the courtesy, and however you develop that in your school, that when you set that tone, that's what it attracts. Is that
yeah,
how you?
I mean, absolutely. Like, you know, you can look at the UFC and you can tell if that person, you know, is what I would call like a martial artist, or is he like, is he a fighter? Because there's a difference, you know. Like, we talk about Tito Ortiz. Like, sure, there's a charade, there's WWF, but in my mind, he doesn't act like a martial artist. You know, he doesn't conduct himself like, you know, I would like to see him conduct. Then on the flip side, you have a guy like Randy Couture, who's always respectful, never has a bad thing to, you know, say about anybody. And this is what we need more of, because while there are a lot of martial artists fighting, these are the guys that you never see on the mic, because,
right,
you know, it's turned into that sideshow. So like I said, I believe like where I came from, like my instructors, the Gracies, they're martial artists, you
right.
know, and I think that's really important. And the moment you take martial arts out of your school to sell an MMA membership, you know, the only person you're selling out is yourself.
Well, you know that, and I just want to thank you for that insight, because I really believe that people, you know, even going to some of the shows, the martial art events, you know, the big plug is MMA, you know, and you're seeing more of the MMA fighters coming in, you know, and a lot of that environment is starting to take away from what I believe to be martial arts, like you had just said, the core to what I believe the integrity of martial arts are: respect and courtesy and self-discipline and control and, you know, that kind of training that takes years to develop. And I'm glad that you had a chance to, you know, tell us a little bit about that, because coming from you, you're a successful MMA, you know, mixed martial arts school where you teach three or four different disciplines, and, you know, you have that respect and courtesy in your schools. So I'm happy that you're
able. Well, the big thing, if I could just interject this, it is a bit of a plug for my school, but, you know, a lot of MMA fighters, so-called MMA fighters and so-called MMA athletes, you know, say the spiel I just give are for those schools that can't cut it in MMA. But, you know, in 2008, my school has had 10 MMA fights, and we're undefeated this year.
That's awesome. And I know even in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you guys are ripping up the circuit and having successful wins continuously.
Yeah, well, that's definitely more thanks to my teacher than me, but absolutely, we've been incredibly fortunate.
Well, now, that's awesome, and I'm really happy so far. And I want to maybe take another 5 minutes and then ask if anyone has any questions. So first question I have for you, too, is what normally do you see, other than, you know, whether you have a spike because of the MMA or the UFC, what do you normally see as a normal normal monthly sign-up rate, and what is your quit rate? How many people drop out versus how many people sign, and what do you attribute that to?
Well, you know, we've had a year that I'm not really happy with, and I have the number in front of me. So far this year, in 2008, we've signed up 197 new students.
Okay.
And we have had 130 people either expire or cancel. So, you know, we are ahead 67 students. That's
right.
Our net growth.
Right.
So, you know, if you want to do the math, we're, you know, we just began the ninth month, and we're basically at 200 members. So, you know, we're in the averaging 20-some a month.
Okay. And
you know,
now
for a sign-up.
That's great. And now, mainly, what is your source? Are you out doing a heavy advertising budget? Are you out there running ads in papers or TV commercials or radio? Or are you more of like a grassroots campaign? Because I know personally you're not, you know, according to the size of your school, you're not nearly putting out what most other schools your size do to maintain the numbers as far as advertising budget, which is a great thing. So you're getting more students with less advertising. But what do you do on a regular basis to promote your school?
The only thing that we ever do is we do absolutely zero radio. We do zero conventional print advertising in terms of, like, running, you know, an ad in any type of paper. Primarily what we do is we are out of the community. If there's a martial arts-related event, we're there. We are heavily, heavily involved with charity. On October 4th, we're throwing a Muay Thai show that's going to see 2,000 people, and it's being run in conjunction with the Ottawa Regional Cancer Foundation. So, I mean, you know, by running in conjunction with this charity, we're going to donate $10,000 or $20,000 to charity. We're going to feel great, but we're going to get 2,000 people in the door that, you know, otherwise we wouldn't target. And, you know, we do things like that, you know, internet, but we, you know, that's about it. I mean, I don't believe in wasting money in advertising because, to be honest with you, I think it's a waste. The only conventional advertising I do of any sort is the Yellow Pages, and I'm not overly thrilled with that. My big new advertising gimmick, and I'll shoot it out there real quick, is...
Yeah, I was waiting to hear it. I know what you're going to say, but that's great.
We went and we had a mascot made. We had a mascot constructed. And this mascot is, like, imagine you're at Disneyland and you saw, like, Donald Duck. Well, our mascot is, like, a panther. It's an 8-foot tall, and this is, like, the same quality as an animal you'd see at Disney. It costs several thousand dollars, but if there's a community event, we are there and we are in it. And that,
you know, I didn't know that. That's something new to me, which is incredible. So so that you're out there doing that and promoting, and that's bringing people, kids and adults, over to your booth or whatever you're doing.
I got a great idea from Kono, you know, when they ran the cover of the Clone Wars. I rented out the cinema down the street from my school, 9 a.m. Sunday morning. We did a private screening, and we had a huge... we had our huge mascot. Our mascot is called Chaos. The kids love him. And we got 90 leads because the friends had to come, but they had to bring a friend. And it was free, no charge. And that promo cost me $1,200. But to get 90 good leads from kids, I mean, you only have to sign up one child to make it worth it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I promoted that on Member Solutions with Kono Magazine, and we did the exact same thing. So, and we got... I guess probably about the same amount of leads as well, so that's great. And you see, you're out there.
I stole that from you in Florida.
Yeah, that's true. That's awesome. Tell me more about the... Also, one last thing was that you actually also had every one of your vehicles wrapped so that you have the logos, and you did test markets on the different styles of advertising on your vehicles, right? How is that working out?
It is incredible. I mean, what we did is what they call a full vehicle wrap, where they basically, for lack of a better word, shrink wrap your entire vehicle. You can have any colored vehicle, and it's going to wind up the color in which they wrap it. And we've done two vehicles so far, with two more to be done. One vehicle is geared towards the jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, and MMA for the adults. The other vehicle is geared towards our children's program, our summer camps and our after-school program, which has really taken off this year. And, you know, we've just been getting so many, you know, inquiries. Like, you pull up to a school to do your after-school pickups, and they see this incredibly cool van with the logos, and, you know, their friends are on the side of the van because the van is decorated with my students, and my students feel really cool, and, you know, it's just been a wonderful hit.
That's great. And now,
you know, just all the information has been enthusiastic.
Well, let me ask you this now. Before we ask questions, if you have any final advice, although you're going to give people advice during the questions, but what would some of your advice be on what you think a school that's up and coming or someone that's growing, what would it be that you would say that they should do in order to achieve what you've achieved in 3 years? Because before I let you answer the question, I have to say that you guys are the type of guys, and I talk about you quite often as clients of mine and taking it to the next level and so on, that you have gone out, if I've given you words of advice or maybe an idea, and right away, bam, you jump on and get it done, and the results are there. There's no hesitation. You're moving forward, and you're moving, you know, step by step in a new direction to keep on growing your school. What would you say to school owners out there looking to achieve what you've achieved? What's your ideas and advice on that?
It's really simple, because I can remember, like, yesterday, you know, my transformation, and, you know, for the people listening, you know, I was an incredibly, you know, stubborn person. I mean, you know, I'm a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and, you know, I'm a fourth degree black belt in the traditional style of Jiu-Jitsu. I work with, like, you know, the Canadian Special Forces, Tier 1, Tier 2 Special Forces. So when I opened my school, I kind of felt, you know, I have built it, they will come. And, you know, I didn't need any martial arts education, but what I needed was martial arts business education. You can be the best practitioner in the world, and it will not help you if you don't know what you're doing. I contacted, obviously, Ali via Member Solutions. Member Solutions was an invaluable tool in my growth. I worked with Ali. I worked with Next Level. I always go to the Maya Super Show every year, and not even necessarily to learn new things, but to keep that motivation and to network. And I just think that's a real integral part of any growth. And the other thing is, I know a lot of people think it's a lot of hocus pocus, but if you go and if you're a motivated individual, go buy a couple books, you know, Tony Robbins, Rob Kiyosaki. You know, these books were all life-changing for me. But I was like one of the different people. I didn't read it and put it down. I read it and I did it.
Yeah, you absolutely did. I remember recommending to you, I think we first met, the Rob Kiyosaki book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and then some of his others, and you went out right away and bought a rental property and started investing in real estate.
It took me 15 days to have my – and not also did I buy that property as a rental property. That was the first property I'd ever bought. And it only took me 15 days. So what I would tell people is, you know, if it boils down to one phrase, and that's take action.
Right, I mean, absolutely.
I already know 50% of you, 50% of the people will hang up and do nothing, and hopefully, you know, just one or two will do something.
Absolutely, and that's important. So, Kathy, let's do this if we can. Maybe I'm sure you've probably gotten a barrage of emails online, and maybe there's some people out there on the phone. We have about 8 minutes, so let's get some real quick questions in. If we could open up the lines, that would be awesome.
Okay, super. If you don't mind, I'll go to the web first.
Okay, great.
Okay, Dale wants to know what the percentage was of your tuition increase. I believe you said it went up 100% over a three-year period, but how much did you do it each time, and was it an annual increase?
No, basically, I went from about $8,000 a month, and then at that Christmas, so we were in May, by that Christmas, I'd cracked $20,000. So I had gone up, you know, over 100% in about 8 months. You know, and I don't mind telling people now, you know, I met Ali and I started working with Ali, I believe it was 3.5 years ago. My tuition was 31 or 32, and that doesn't include the other 56 I did in-house.
Now, Pat, you also, when you did your increases as far as tuition goes, you went from $80 to how much at a percentage of an increase monthly, like on each program, did you go up? Did you go up $20 a month? Did you go up 15% overall in the year? How did you space out those increments and those growth?
I was basically at $50 for my cheap program, $75 for my expensive program, and I went up when I spoke to you. I believe I went up to, I went from 50 to 65, and then I went from 75 to 80. And I can tell people now my program, that was my first increase. And then I did about $10 increments. And today my base cheapest program is $99, and my high-end program is $150. And then I still have a couple of other upgrades.
Yeah, we talked about possibly upgrading a little bit more besides that as well.
Yeah, they're just the other upgrades are like they're like a pay one shot deal.
Right.
My high end tuition is $149 a month, but I mean like if you want to do comp, team, an extra $500 a year type thing.
That's awesome. How about some more questions, Kathy?
Okay, David in Florida said he's got a post-it note flyer, and he wants to know what do you recommend as far as using them.
What do you mean by a post-it note flyer?
I think what he's saying is that you know the post-it notes, those little stickies, they have that where you peel it off of the pad and you stick it onto a car or something like that. And I've actually promoted that in some of the seminars as well. Do you do anything like that?
You know, I don't do anything like that, but the literature I do have and I do hand it out, I try to hand it out when I know I'm going to hit the right demographic. And what I like to do is I got this from guys like Ali and Jim King, especially with my kids. I'll give a stack of flyers to my kids, and they will, like, in Ali's words, like, infiltrate the schools like, you know, ninjas. And kids want to be kids, and they want to be cool like their other friends. You know, that's what I do.
Good. I hope that answered that question. What other questions, Kathy?
Okay, Master Butler wants to know, how much are your belt exam fees and how much are your seminar fees?
Oh, okay. Does he mean when I bring a guest into my school?
Yeah.
I think just anytime you charge for a seminar.
Okay, generally, I don't do any belt exam fees at all. You know, there's a raging war, you should or you shouldn't. I personally do not because I have so many other streams of revenue and, you know, angles that I'm constantly working. I don't do any belt testing fees. When I have a seminar up, I'll just give you the most recent seminar. We had three Gracie black belts up from the New York Academy, and I was able to do it very affordably. It was $75 for the day, $125 for the weekend.
That's awesome. Great price.
Great.
Okay,
thank
Kathy,
you.
What else do we have?
Dwight from Miami. He's got a few things on here. One is he's saying, Pat, do you think that you were in the right place at the right time with your art and that added to your success, or do you think that anyone in another art can follow your example and achieve your level of success?
I personally believe, you know, the whole art thing is garbage. I think you could teach origami, and if you have the right staff and the right attitude, you'll be a raging success. And this is why I'm going to tell you why. Why Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu on the whole is behind the eight ball is because if you look at guys like Ali, the Kovar, Steve LaValle, they do karate. Jiu-Jitsu guys like me had an ego how they could not go ask these guys for help. But I personally believe, you know, that's garbage. Because, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. If you get somebody with a successful school, don't try to go in there and say, I like that, I don't like that. And I was a bit victim of that when I first met Ali. You know, pick somebody, a mentor, if you will, and it's going to work out if you do the work. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I have to compliment on that or comment on that because I have a lot of people that I do consulting work with that are always picking and choosing. And, you know, I'll ask them, let's say, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10-week calls, let's do them. And they may or may not do them to the fullest extent. And what happens is the results end up being poor. So they believe that the program is not going to work and they move on to the next thing, always looking for that big hit rather than taking a lot of little things and becoming more professional about it like you do at your school, Pat. And you work with the systems and work them well, and that's why you've achieved such great success overall. It's a big picture kind of thing versus little tiny little things here and there. So,
if I could just interject on that, one thing I learned about the 2 to 10 week calls, my big gripe with them when I started is it takes sometimes a lot of manpower, but if you don't do them, you're not serious about wanting to grow your school. End of story with those calls. You need to do them.
Absolutely. That's awesome. I'm glad you said that because I always push them. Well, how about another question, Kathy?
Okay, and then after this one more question, I'm going to open the phone lines in case there's anyone on the telephone that wants to ask a question.
Okay.
Just quick question. The bikini-clad women and the men at your event, those are hired models, aren't they? Are they your students?
They're all volunteers. I personally, you know, I believe in being professional. I am not presumptuous enough to ask any of my students to do that. We put up a sign-up list, and you have to understand I have a very young demographic, but no, I would never ask any of my students to do that. And no, they weren't hired models. They were in-house people.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to unmute the phone lines now.
Anybody out there have a question for Pat? You got to ask quickly or else because we're running out of time.
Okay, if there's nobody else on the phone line, I have one question for Pat. Your vehicle wrap,
yes.
Your vehicle wrap vans and your Panther named Chaos, is he anywhere on your website where people can look at them, look at both of those things?
If you go to maybe in the photo gallery on the children's section of my website or if you go on the news section somewhere, you should be able to find them. But I will say I personally believe I've only had Chaos now for 6 weeks, and just the absolute insane feedback I'm getting for this, and I'll be honest, it was a $5,000 investment, and it's already paid me back easily. And I personally would almost wager to say if you use it right with the community, we already have community events calling us to want to book Chaos. So, like, I mean, I think it is just going to be a tremendous, tremendous success for our school. It already has been.
That's
Can
great.
Can you give all of our listeners your website domain so that the people listening to this later will know as well?
Yeah, it's www.oama.ca.
Thank you.
Pat, how about before we close up, because I know we're going to run out of time real quick, I just wanted to say that this was a great interview. I appreciate you taking the time, especially while you're in Brazil, and I'm sure the phone call's not cheap either, so thanks for doing that for us. And we really appreciate all your knowledge and sharing with us the growth that you've had. And if anyone wants to get in touch with you and pick your brain a little bit more, is it okay if they email you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm having a bit of a server issue. I'll give everybody my personal email. It is pcooligan@hotmail.com. That's pcooligan@hotmail.com. And, you know, I'd love to hear from anybody. And, you know, I don't pretend to have all the answers, but if I can't help you, I'll find somebody that can.
Yeah, and if you have a hard time getting in touch with Pat, just email me, of course, and everyone should know my email by now, but it's renshi.ninja@aol.com. And, again, I think this was a great interview. We're going to do these probably every 2 or 3 months, and maybe, Pat, you can assist us, and we'll do maybe interview Henzo Gracie at some point because I know you're very close with him, and we'd love to, you know, see any of you out there that are listening. If you're interested in being interviewed, email me and let me know why you'd be able to help our clients, and I'd love to talk to you as well. And thanks a lot, Pat, for being with us all the way from sunny Brazil. And go enjoy your training and get some downtime. And I know the food's amazing there. Eventually, you and I are going to get to go together on a trip there. And, again, just thanks so much for being with us today.
That was my pleasure, and thanks a lot, Allie, and thank you, Kathy.
Kathy, thanks so much. I guess we'll talk real soon, everybody, so keep in touch with me.